living in a cheap hotel. The desert's quiet, Cleveland's cold. So the story.
Welcome back to the Jeff Flores Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Wednesday morning. Broadcasting live from the Alabama State House. We are very, very blessed to be having the leader, Stathagen, give us his office for the program today. Very appreciative of that, as always. Eventually, we'll get Stathagen on him to do the show at some point. But anyway, enough of that. Join us on the line. A little under the weather, so he's calling in, but we're grateful to hear from State Representative Matt Simpson from our neck of the woods. Daphne, Matt, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. You know, I'm at home with the family. Unfortunately, we had a little COVID outbreak in the house, so I'm enjoying watching online, and family's getting better.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Hopefully everything works out as it's supposed to. Well, this is a big deal, man. This bill, the fentanyl bill, quite an achievement. Congratulations on that. You really worked hard on it. You shepherded it all the way through. We've had a little time for it to kind of sink in. What do you think?
I'm excited. You know, this is a bill that we've worked hard on for, coming up on almost a full year now. To have everyone's buy-in the way that we did, it was special. You know, to have 105 votes in the House, to have 101 co-sponsors is something I've never seen. I've only been there, it's my fifth year, but I've never seen 101 co-sponsors on a bill. And then to go through the Senate, unanimous through the Senate, 31-0. You know, had no problems in committees at all. It was really something that showed that this was a bipartisan issue, that fentanyl doesn't know a party, it doesn't know a race, it doesn't know a socioeconomic status. It is killing our communities, and everyone came together to get on board to fight this epidemic that we're facing.
Yeah, just broad, widespread support, but it was necessary. You didn't really have anything on the books to deal with this. And we all know the threat of fentanyl. We all know just a small amount is very, very small amount is lethal. But Alabama needed to act. They need to put some parameters in place, right?
Yeah, fentanyl was.
And sorry about that. Like I said, it's always hit or miss when we're broadcasting at the State House. Internet a little shaky at times, but we're back on. Matt, I hate to ask you to do all that over again, but just for the sake of our listeners, we're talking about it. There's mandatory minimums for everything except fentanyl.
Yeah. So with fentanyl, now that this law has passed it, if you will traffic between, if you have between 1 gram and 2 grams, so more than one but less than two, you'll have a mandatory minimum of 3 years to serve. You have between 2 grams and 4 grams, it'll be a mandatory minimum of 10 years to serve. You have between 4 grams and 8 grams, it'll be a mandatory minimum of 25 years to serve. And if you have more than 8 grams, it's mandatory life in prison. And each of those sentences is day for day. That's not eligible for good time. That's not eligible for early release. That is calendar years that will have to be served day for day. So we're going pretty strong at it, and we need to go strong at it.
Well, you talk to the local prosecutors all around the state. I'm sure you're probably hearing the same thing and not really having the tools of the tool chest to deal with it, but I got to assume that it's, nowhere in Alabama is immune to this.
No, it's not. Your listeners, Jeff Ball in Mobile County, we're on that I-10 corridor, so we see it a lot. We see what's going on as it comes from that southern border, that open border where the drugs are being brought in from the cartels, where they try to get to Florida or up the East Coast, they come through that chain. But it's not just Mobile and Baldwin County. It's up the I-65 corridor. It's up, as they go, try to go to Tennessee to get through there. And it's not just the urban population centers. It's rural Alabama as well. This drug has kind of taken over. It is the drug that people are looking for. But it's so dangerous. Like, it's not the marijuana of the 70s or the cocaine of the 80s or it's not even the methamphetamine of the 2000s. Like, this is a whole monster amongst itself, and such a small amount can kill you. So the best way I've described it is 2 milligrams is a lethal dose. What that means is if any of your listeners are at a restaurant or a diner or anything, and they have a Sweet and Low packet right in front of them to put their coffee in, That packet is 1 gram. So that 1 gram would be enough to kill 500 people if that was pure fentanyl. So just to kind of give you your listeners an understanding of how small of a dose is lethal, that, you know, you think of 1 gram being able to kill 500 people, that's just nuts.
Well, Matt, what do we think this is going to do? How many people is this going to take off the street? Bad people that ought to be off the street. But, I mean, you always, unfortunately, got to think of the consequences of the prison system. Are we going to be in a place where we can take on this new burden?
You know, I think it's going to be tough at the beginning. I think it's going to be a lot of people at the beginning that don't know. You know, you check the news headlines every day and you see the people that are arrested for trafficking fentanyl or the amounts of fentanyl that they have in their possession. But it's going to take a few people to get the message out. It's going to take some people to get a life in prison sentence. It's going to take some people to be removed from the streets, for a long period of time. And then hopefully the message will be sent to the traffickers to say, hey, we don't want to bring that here. We're not going to mess with that one. That's not what we're going to deal with. You know, fentanyl or something else. So if we can send the message to the traffickers, if we can send the message to the dealers, if you have this in your possession, you're going to go to prison. I anticipate they may look for something else to do.
Yeah, it serves as a useful deterrent. But I suppose, I mean, hopefully a lot of laws do that. But something's got to be done here, right? I think is that pretty much you're looking at this and – You've been here for 5 years, and you've never seen so many co-sponsors. Pretty broad consensus there that something had to be done, and it probably wasn't a lot of pushback, was there?
No, there wasn't a lot of pushback, and we recognize them. Look, we understand, hey, there's a lot of people in prison. We've got an overcrowding situation right now. We're spending money left and right on prisons, and I don't know that we're getting the money, the bang for the buck that we have. You look at what we're doing. I think the latest figures are it's $1 billion for that facility up in Elmore County for 4,000 beds. And that's, you know, breaks out to about $250,000 per bed. And that's a lot. You know, there's a lot of people in your listeners, you know, that don't have homes at $250,000. And how are we paying that for a single bed in a prison? I think that we have this issue, we have this problem, we have to address our prisons, we have to address the situations, but we need to do so fiscally, we need to do so responsibly. You know, this whole process, even still of what we have, as you look through what the plans have been, would create the exact same number of beds as we have now. We're going to spend roughly, you know, $2 billion so far, possibly going up to $3 billion, and we're going to wake up after we spent that $3 billion with the same number of beds that we have currently. I don't think it's a sustainable situation. I think we need to do more. I think we need to build more prisons. I think we need to take care of the prisoners that we have. And I think we need to, you know, I'm happy to serve on that prison oversight committee. You know, I'm excited to get appointed. I had Speaker Ledbetter appointed me on that. I think we have a heavy lift ahead of us. But we're not ducking our head in the sand. We're taking it up. We're looking at it and seeing, hey, this is something we really need to address. So, you know, I'm excited to be on the ground floor working on this.
Well, I mean, at times it just, this is me talking, it does seem like any day now, I mean, when this, you know, especially when you hear these casualties or these deaths inside the walls of these correctional facilities, the feds, this can't go unnoticed. And are we going to wake up one morning and be in some kind of receivership situation? I mean, is that a possibility?
You know, it's certainly a possibility. I think the feds are kind of, you know, chomping at the bit. I know the Attorney General's office is doing everything they can to stand up for Alabama laws and, you know, talk with General Marshall about this. And, you know, he said that's some time. That is not something we're looking down immediately. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but it's not far down the line. It's something we have to be working now to figure out the problems so that way when it does, you know, when that case does come to trial or when they start looking at this, we can show some effort through. We can show we're trying to address this issue. You know, it's difficult. You've got to walk the fine line of, I understand that it costs money for us to keep people in our custody, in state custody. But at the end of the day, some people need to be in prison. That is a fundamental job of the state government, is to make sure that our streets are safe and that we address public safety. And if we just let everybody out or just decide we're not going to punish crimes anymore because it costs too much money, I don't think that's serving the people well. I think we need to figure out what we need to do to pay what we need to pay to make sure our citizens are safe.
Well, the other problem with prisons, I guess, is, you know, the prison guard shortage, the correctional officer shortage, that you guys keep raising the pay, but it just doesn't seem to be a lot of takers. I know labor participation pretty widespread across the board. What do you got to do there? It seems like you've done just about everything you could do. Otherwise,
we've done everything we can do to put the incentives to try to get people to hire. What one thing that I am happy about with these new builds that we're looking at is it's not going to take the same number of guards to be in the prison. Meaning, right now they're in prisons and they may be in a dorm slash, you know, equivalent of a gymnasium where people are sleeping, and you've got 400 or 500 people sleeping on beds on top of each other. So it's difficult for officers to be able to patrol in there. It's difficult for your corrections officers to be able to know what's going on. With this new system, when we get our Alabama prisons updated to what they should be and what the national model is, instead of having 500 people in just one large room, you break them down into these pod systems. So where instead of, you know, one room of 500, you have 10 rooms of 50. And if something happens, if there's an outbreak or something goes on, you can lock down the other 9 pods and just address the situation that you're having to face at that particular moment that there needs to be a response for. That's better for officer safety. You know, you've got to make sure that when they build these prisons, they're going to make sure that they don't have these hidden spots where cameras can't catch. They're going to make sure that the officers can walk by, and rather than having to walk in amongst the population, they can stroll behind the glass and make sure that they can see everything that's going on so the officers don't have to put themselves in dangerous situations. We have to address this. You know, we have to make it a safe work environment for the guards so that way we can get some more guards to work there. You know, there's not one simple, easy fix. It's not like we're going to just be able to say, okay, we built a new prison. Ha, we've solved all these problems. There's a lot to address. There's a lot to go into the whole situation of what you have. You look at criminal justice. You look at, you know, you look at some of these dead time laws that we just addressed with Senator Weaver's bill. And I'm very happy to be appointed on the Truth in Sentencing Commission. So we need to look at our sentences to make sure that we're giving sentences that have, you know, the punishment we're looking at is something that the person knows what they're serving, that the victim knows what they're serving, that everyone knows what they're doing when someone gets sentenced to prison. So there's a lot going on in this area right now. And, you know, we're working on it. I can tell you where I haven't seen this much work being done on it since I've been there. But there are multiple facets of being addressed and trying to see what we can do to make sure that, if, you know, a year down the line, 2 years down the line, when that lawsuit does actually go to trial, we show, hey, we've made efforts.
Well, and you mentioned being on the Truth and Sentencing Commission. How far away? I mean, do you foresee that as something that is a realistic possibility, getting back to a truth and sentencing model?
I do. I think, you know, you have prosecutors and judges right now who are saying, okay, well, we're going to give you a sentence of 30 years to serve. Well, the prosecutors and judges know that that person's not serving 30 years. They're going to get out in 10 or 12 years on that 30-year sentence. So instead of coming up with fake, make-believe numbers on sentences, let's put it down to a number that's realistic. Let's put it down to a number that they're actually going to serve on these sentences. What I would propose, and what I think is the answer, is you create a range of punishment. So instead of someone being sentenced to 30 years in prison, where they're eligible for all these good times and early release and everything, you set a range and say, okay, you're setting a period, you're sentenced to prison for 12 years, for 12 to 18. If you behave, then you get out in 12. If you don't behave, then you've got 18 ahead of you. But you know that victim would know when they get out, when they go home that day, that for at least the next 12 years, that person is going to go to bed at night and they're going to have doors playing behind them because they're going to go to bed in the prison cell, which is a far better opportunity and just kind of more comfort for victims to know, okay, this is what you really have. It would allow the judges and allow the prosecutors to know, okay, we can actually bring our sentences down because we know they're actually serving the time, not some make-believe number that's just a fake number out there.
Matt, we're up against the break. Sorry about the hiccup there, but you've been very kind to come on, and let's talk again soon.
Sounds good.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, stay representing Matt Simpson. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Sing about sweet home in Dixieland delight. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight. Cause music row ain't only in Tennessee. So won't you bury me in Dixie?